You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Sister Bay is getting set for the 6th annual Roofing of the Goats Parade this weekend. We'll learn how they got on the roof in the first place and what visitors can expect at the parade. First, new footage from Sterling Brown's arrest surfaced earlier this week, and Milwaukee's Common Council says the first time they saw it was when it aired on TV. The video was obtained by WISN-TV in Milwaukee. It shows a clearer picture of what happened the night Brown was arrested and tased. In this body camera footage, one officer describes Brown as aggressive toward police.
As soon as you roll up, you know, he walks up on Joe, he walks up on me, and he's got an aggressive attitude.
Alderman Cavalier Johnson represents Milwaukee's 2nd District. He's one of 10 alders who called for an investigation after the new footage came out. Alderman Johnson, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Before we get to the content of this footage, part of the story is the timing of the first release of some footage and then this newer footage that we hadn't seen before. Can you talk about when you first encountered this new material?
I encountered the new material when the general public encountered the new material, when it was released on the news just a couple days ago. That was the first time I got the chance to see that information, that video.
And what struck you about what you saw in that video that we hadn't seen previously in this arrest of Sterling Brown?
It just continued to further highlight my dissatisfaction with the entire incident. After viewing the first video, there were a list of questions that I had, and those questions were compounded after seeing the second video. Questions like, why did it take, you know, 6 or so grown men to take down one person who, by all accounts from what I've seen, was not resisting arrest? We get phone calls from people, not just in my district, but across the city, complaining about, you know, 30, 40, sometimes up to an hour of wait time when they call the police, yet the entire precinct seems to have emptied out in order to come after somebody for a parking violation, which I think was you know, highly inappropriate. And questions about the lax nature about the initial ask for a taser, and looking at the other body cam footage where you get a better vantage point of Sterling Brown's body and his movements, it didn't seem like it was necessary to even do that in the first place. So it just, again, compounds the questions that I had in the first place.
Now, some of the officers involved in the arrest have been disciplined. Is that enough? Do you think the police department has done enough at this point?
Well, I think that I don't want to get ahead of what the Fire and Police Commission or the department itself may do as far as discipline. I think that after taking in what we've seen in the additional videos, if it's appropriate for additional disciplinary action to be taken, then it definitely should be taken. But I don't want to get ahead of those jurisdictions in doing that.
Talking to Alderman Cavalier Johnson from Milwaukee about the arrest of Milwaukee Bucks player Sterling Brown. Two separate releases of video now, one obtained by a local police, TV station there, I should say. Alderman Johnson, you and some of your colleagues are calling for an investigation now. What exactly are you looking for?
Well, we're looking to see exactly how this all happened. Why did the officer, the initial officer who seemed to be the aggressor in the situation, why did he approach Sterling Brown that way? Why didn't he just give Sterling a parking citation and let that be that? Why was it that the entire precinct seemed to have emptied out for a call about a parking violation? Why did it take, you know, so many officers to subdue one person who was not, at least from what I saw, resisting arrest? Why, even with having all of those officers, fully grown men, why did it take them to use a taser on him when it didn't seem as if he, you know, was flailing or fighting back or anything like that? Those are the sort of questions that we are trying to get the answers to, as well as what is the department going to do so that we don't have these sort of incidents happen in the future, not just with a high-profile person like Sterling Brown, but for any person, black or brown, or any person really in our community, because nobody should be subject to that, especially if it's a parking violation. You should just get a ticket, not be tased.
And then who are you calling on to be in charge of this investigation? Would it be the Police and Fire Commission?
Well, the Fire and Police Commission is the appropriate body to do that. They're the body that oversees the day-to-day operations of the police department and the fire department in the city of Milwaukee.
And another question people have been bringing up is, okay, we have body cameras now for the police department. There are questions about who gets to see that footage and when do they get to see it. And with the two separate pieces of footage now that we've seen, some initially released to the public and to public officials, and some not released until it was obtained by a TV station. Are you looking to review how that information, that data is used?
Yes, we are. That is, that's one of the things that we're asking for, is a full audit of the entire situation, including the way that those sort of videos are shared. In the joint statement released by myself and the other members of the Common Council, now, we had discussed our displeasure with the fact that these additional clips were not shown to council members initially with the first video, and you know, we just caught wind of them when everybody else in the public did. So we want to know what that looks like and how we can turn that around and make sure that that information is brought to the forefront in an open sort of setting as far as this conversation is concerned. And investigating how we can get in front of that in the future as well.
That said, are you glad that the body cam footage exists? If it didn't, we would probably have very little idea of what happened that night.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that I was one of the alders who voted in favor of having body cams to be equipped on our police officers, and I'm extremely grateful that this was the case, because I think whether it's here or in other places across the country, there are too many incidents like this that happen that don't get reported. They get swept under a rug, where somebody who is the victim of these sort of actions is not a high-profile person like an NBA player like Sterling Brown was. And body camera footage allows us to be able to go back and to see exactly what it is that's happening on the streets. You know, in communities like this and others, you know, there has been historical distrust of law enforcement. Now, I've had the opportunity since I've been an alderman, and even in my work before that, to work with the police department very closely. And I know that there are tremendous police officers that get up every single day, put on their badge, and come really to protect and serve. But I've also been a young Black person in this community, and I've been pulled over by the police for no reason. I've been made to sit on the curb as if I'm a criminal for no reason. I've had my vehicle searched when I've never committed a crime. So I have seen that, and I can only imagine what it's like for people who live in some of the most distressed zip codes in our city. So I think it's highly appropriate. We entrust our police department to do the right thing, to protect us and to serve us, and we need to make sure that they're doing that. And body cameras, I think, gives us an avenue to be able to confirm that that's actually happening, and they're not abusing people in this community, especially people who live in our more distressed neighborhoods.
Obviously, there are a lot of negatives. There's a lot of bad news to talk about in this arrest of Sterling Brown and the response to it. Are you hopeful that with an investigation, with a conversation, something positive could come out of it when it comes to police-community relations?
Absolutely. You know, the new chief has said his sort of his strategy in his administration is going to be one of transparency, is going to be one of community collaboration. And I hope that this happens. And if things like this do occur, I want for our police department and our city officials to come and to stand up and to address the situation head on, so that we can have a conversation, so that there can be healing, so that we can improve relationships between the police and community. Look, I mean, things don't get better on our streets. Crimes don't get solved. People who feel that they can act with impunity on our streets, they don't get arrested. They're not followed up with if we don't have buy-in from the community. We have to have a two-way dialogue between people who live in the city of Milwaukee and the people who patrol the city of Milwaukee, and hopefully they're residents of the city of Milwaukee as well. But there has to be that sort of collaboration between the two. And I think having body cam footage available, especially after incidents like this, and having appropriate follow-up allows us to be able to do that. So, yes, I am glad.
Alderman Johnson, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me again.
That's Alderman Cavalier Johnson. He represents Milwaukee's 2nd District. With us to talk about an investigation called for by Milwaukee's Common Council into Sterling Brown's arrest earlier this year. Now, Al Johnson's Swedish restaurant in Door County is famous in part for having goats grazing on its sod roof. The goats haven't made an appearance yet this year, but that's about to change with the roofing of the Goats Parade this Saturday. Starting at 10:30 in the morning, the goats will make their way down Highway 42 in Sister Bay. Lars Johnson is the co-owner of Al Johnson's Swedish restaurant. Lars, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Good afternoon.
Well, this will be the 6th goat parade, as I understand it, but the goats have been around a lot longer up on the roof. How, Lars, did goats end up on the roof of this restaurant?
Well, it's really a great story. In 1973, when my parents traveled to Scandinavia to bring the log buildings back to Door County, when they built the building here in Sister Bay, one of my dad's best friends, the first structure that actually had sod on it, or grass on it, if you will, was our sign. And one of my dad's best friends was always playing a practical joke on him, and he would always show up with an animal. Well, that particular day, he decided to put a billy goat on the top of the sign, which was the very first goat that appeared on a roof in downtown Sister Bay.
And now goats on the roof are a regular thing, especially in the summer. And they, what, they just hang out up there and graze?
They really have the best of both worlds. Most farm animals never leave their pasture their entire lifetime. And we have a great Wisconsin classic red barn about a mile away from the restaurant where the goats live during the 12 months out of the year. And every morning, we load up what we call the goat truck, and then we bring them into Sister Bay, and we have a ramp for them, and they run right up on the roof, and they never appear on the roof if it's raining or too hot, so we're very careful about making sure that the conditions are just perfect for the goats.
And I was looking at the goat cam earlier today and wondering why there weren't goats there. Well, of course, that you haven't started putting them up there yet this year.
Well, we officially put them up on Saturday morning at 10:30. The parade starts, and then they'll officially appear on the roof. We have made a couple of trial runs already this year, so we know that the leaders of the herd know what they're doing, and so they're ready to go. So we're not in for any surprises.
Talking to Lars Johnson from Al Johnson's Swedish Restaurant, previewing the roofing of the Goats Parade this weekend in Sister Bay. All right, it's one thing to have goats on the roof. It's another to take goats on parade. How did that get started?
Well, I think everybody always asks, when will the goats appear? And our marketing team decided that we could go ahead and we should try a goat parade. There's been, and I think some of my management staff has compared it to the running of the bulls. And the first year we did it, we kind of got rained out. Well, it turned into just a couple of goats to other people in the area bringing their goats. And so all goats are welcome. Just as long as they behave themselves, and we usually have anywhere from 40 to 50 or more goats that will appear on the morning of the parade.
I don't know a lot about goats, but my understanding of their personality is that they're kind of stubborn. Is it sometimes difficult to get a bunch of goats all walking in the same direction?
I don't know where that ever started, but I.
Oh, really?
But goats in itself, they're very social animals, and they're very friendly. We prefer Nubian goats. They're the goats that have the floppy ears, and I also like fainting goats. They're very docile, and when they're very young, they faint a lot, almost like a possum, if you will. But as they age, they don't faint as often. And then we use a lot of pygmy goats as well. Over the years, I've participated with a lot of goat rescue people in the Midwest, and a lot of times it's very easy to find goats that people no longer want. And so we do take goats into our barn, and we've turned ourselves into somewhat of a sanctuary sometimes as well.
And you welcome goats in the parade. You welcome dogs at a lot of things in the community. This is maybe one place where people, if I have this right, should not bring the dogs along.
Well, we try to discourage that. For the most part, dogs are very, very interested in the goats as much as the goats are interested in them. However, there are times that, you know, especially with the goats having horns, that we don't want any fights to start, and we certainly don't want any harm to come to the goats or to the dogs.
Now, this is an unusual event, even for Wisconsin. Are people in the Sister Bay area really getting into this parade?
Yeah, it's really turned into a Door County event, not only just a Sister Bay event. People have been contacting us for many, many months trying to make plans, and I know hotel reservations. People plan their vacation sometimes around this particular weekend, and as long as Mother Nature cooperates, we should have a marvelous day on Saturday morning.
And the parade now is followed by the third annual Goat Fest. What happens there?
Yeah, well, we brought another building over from Scandinavia, and we have an adjacent building next to our restaurant, and the technical name of the building is called Stabur. And it's our Scandinavian beer pub, and it's an outdoor beer pub, and it has a traditional grass roof, and we'll have live bands and lots of arts and crafts for kids. We'll have a pancake eating contest, so it'll be just a real fun day for families to have a great time in downtown Sister Bay.
And I'll say people online are really into goats lately, and I hear that Door County is having kind of a goat boom. A lot more people are raising goats there. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, I think the reason why that happened about 15 years ago or so, when we had a downturn in the economy, I think Wisconsin has, I've been told by UW, the UW Ag Department, that Wisconsin may have the most registered goat dairy farms in the United States. I think a lot of people got into raising goats and sheep during the downturn in the economy, and they've stayed with it. And here in Door County, I know that it's really taken off. There's some really fantastic places that make some great goat cheeses. Even here in the Sister Bay area, the Creamery, for instance, they're right up the road from us. His herd has really exploded. And I know it's a full-time job, 24/7 milking goats. And so all the different kinds of goat cheese and goat milk has really exploded here in Door County.
We'll leave it there. Lars, thanks for joining us. Have fun and good luck with the weather.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you very much.
That's Lars Johnson, co-owner of Al Johnson's Swedish Restaurant in Sister Bay. This Saturday, it's the 6th annual Roofing of the Goats Parade. It begins at 10:30 a.m., followed by Goat Fest starting at noon. And I stand corrected, I will no longer call goats stubborn. Lesson learned. Now, summertime is a big reading season for a lot of people, whether it's finding a great book to take on vacation or just using those extra hours of daylight to fit in some more reading time. We want to hear what you're reading or looking forward to reading this summer at 800-642-1234. Are you revisiting an old favorite, excited for a new release? Are you into fiction, nonfiction, memoir, something else? Do you need a recommendation? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Elizabeth Curry Chandler is co-founder and editor-in-chief of Goodreads. Elizabeth, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks.
Well, I imagine working with Goodreads, you're reading all year long. That said, is there something special about the summer season when it comes to reading?
Well, I think it's special because so many people outside of Goodreads want to read in the summer. You know, it's time to go to the beach or on vacation, and it's a great opportunity to catch up on some reading. So we see, even on the site, a little bit of a pop. People love to read.
And is there such a thing as a summer read? Do people look for different stuff for that vacation book? Do you in particular?
I think it's interesting. There's a lot of different types of summer reads. Some people catch up on that deep classic that they've always wanted to read. Others want something really light and fluffy. Some people try and pick books that are topical. Personally, I'm always just trying to fill in kind of the holes in what I'm reading. I want to read a genre that I haven't normally read or understand better what's going on in the world.
Well, let's start there with some nonfiction then. Michael Pollan, now he's a big name. He's written a lot of food books. His new book is getting a lot of attention, a book on psychedelics, How to Change Your Mind. So what's this one all about?
Well, it's pretty crazy that he's gone from the slow food movement to psychedelics. It's definitely a new direction. But it's a really interesting book because he researches and tries drugs such as LSD, mushrooms, ayahuasca, and DMT. And it's an interesting story because he blends science, history, reportage, travel writing, and very personal stories as he's investigating these substances. And he finds that some are being used to treat conditions such as depression, addiction, anxiety. He also finds an underground community of psychedelic therapists and Silicon tech people who are microdosing, and cancer patients who are using it to eliminate their fear of death. It's a really kind of explosive expose of a book.
Yeah, it doesn't, I know it's probably hard to predict bestsellers and things like that, but it seems like somebody with a high profile and a big name in the book world like Michael Pollan, a topic like this, this is something a lot of people are probably going to check out.
Yeah, I think it's very topical, and I think he's a great person to tackle the subject with his level of journalism and his easy way of writing. He's very compelling.
I want to look at another nonfiction one that was on your list of anticipated book releases for the season. Very topical, speaking of keeping up with the news of the day, with North Korea in the news all the time. A book called A River in Darkness, One Man's Escape from North Korea, a memoir. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this book is amazing. It's a nonfiction memoir by Masagi Ishikawa, and it's a riveting inside look into a very secretive country. He has a Japanese mother and a Korean father, and he grew up in Japan, and when he was 13 years old, his father moved to North Korea, lured by the promises of work, good education, and a higher station in society. And when he arrived there, it was a very different experience. He spent 36 years in North Korea in the lowest social caste and escaped, and then went through an arduous process to repatriate himself in Japan. And our members say things like, it reads like a dystopian novel. It's one of the best firsthand narratives about life in North Korea they've ever read. And one of the quotes that I thought was particularly moving about this book is he wrote that the kind people were the first to die. It's a very intense, fascinating book.
This would be a fascinating read. It is not necessarily your light vacation read that you might be looking for, it sounds like.
No, maybe not if you're looking to relax and just sort of unplug from serious subjects. I do have a recommendation if you really, really want to unplug, which would be The Kiss Quotient by Helen Hong. It's for romance readers, people who like that type of book, and it's really interesting because it evolved from the author's own journey with autism spectrum disorder, and the main character works as a mathematician and economist, and she wants to get better at sex. So she hires an escort named Michael to teach her all about that and then also teach her about relationships. And even Roxane Gay reviewed on her site that it's surprisingly original, sexy, and sensitive. And a lot of our readers wrote that it rekindles their interest in the romance genre, and it's sweet and steamy.
Interesting. The Kiss Quotient is the title.
Yes.
Talking to Elizabeth Currie Chandler, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Goodreads. She is sharing a lot of great suggestions of books out or about to come out, summer reads. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you need a recommendation, or do you have a book to recommend? It can be something new or something old. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We have this up on our Ideas Network Facebook page, too. You can share your recommendations there. Let's stick with fiction for a little bit. I'm seeing this one on a few different lists coming out. A thriller called The Death of Mrs. Westaway by author, this is a familiar name, Ruth Ware. Can you tell us about this one?
Yes, she's the author of The Woman in Cabin 10 and In a Dark, Dark Wood. Which are some great mystery thriller books about women in the wrong place at the wrong time. And this book is really interesting because it's the first time her main character goes looking for trouble. Usually trouble finds them. But in this book, the main character is a tarot card reader, but she doesn't believe in tarot cards. She just uses her powers and abilities to read people in order to manipulate them. And she receives a letter saying that she's being bequeathed a substantial inheritance. But the only problem is she very well knows that she's not related to that person, but she decides to go to this creepy gothic house anyway and manipulate people to collect the money because she has financial difficulties. And the author actually spoke with us and said that she loves anti-heroes such as Tom Ripley and The Talented Mr. Ripley, and did this book as an homage to many mystery writers that she adores, such as Agatha Christie, Daphne du Maurier, and Patricia Highsmith.
Now, that setup could be a Scooby-Doo episode, but it sounds like it's a lot more than that. Not to knock Scooby-Doo. I like Scooby-Doo.
I do, too.
pretty fun and a complicated lead character, it sounds like.
Yes, yes. And it has a kind of a gothic, creepy house feel. And I think it's the best reviewed site on Goodreads of all four she's written. So it should be good.
I want to bring on one of our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Kevin with us in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. I'd like to recommend British author Jody Taylor series, The Chronicles of St. Mary's. There's like 8 or 9 in the series. It's a little bit of history, romance, comedy, light on the sci-fi, but the time travel kind of series that just grabbed my attention from the first book, and I can hardly wait for the next one to come out every time.
Kevin, thanks a lot. The Chronicles of St. Mary, it's a series. It's great to find a series. He mentioned there's a historical tie, and Elizabeth, you shared some historical fiction with us, a big genre. This one, I'm guessing, might have some natural appeal, a book called My Dear Hamilton by Stephanie Dre.
Yes. So if you can't get enough of the all things Alexander Hamilton, here's another book by Stephanie Dre and Laura Kamoy, the authors of America's First Daughter. And it is a way to view the founding of our country from the eyes of Elizabeth Schuyler, who fell for the brilliant and penniless Alexander Hamilton. And what's interesting about it is you really get a view of their imperfect union. And it's a story about a woman with a lot of strength, courage, and forgiveness. And our readers have called it a rollicking read filled with duels, scandals, battles, balls, and betrayal.
All right, that sounds like a lot of fun. Let's bring on another caller. Jeff is on the line in Onalaska. Jeff, hi.
Hello. I was kind of looking for a recommendation, maybe somebody with like a book with really strong characters and preferably just lyrical or beautiful writing. Do you have anything you know of like that?
Jeff, do you have any authors that you use as kind of a touchstone?
Like John Steinbeck, or I don't know if you know of John Williams. He wrote Stoner and Butcher's Crossing.
Okay, Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Elizabeth, anything leap to mind that might be Jeff's cup of tea?
Well, I love that he mentioned Stoner, because that book is a real classic, and we had a couple people who work at Goodreads who've always called that book their favorite book, so that's kind of a book from the past. This is a little bit of a side, a tangent, but it still connects. There's a book about Ernest Hemingway that I can recommend called Love and Ruin, which is historical fiction by Paula McLean, who wrote The Paris Wife. And this time she comes back to the wives of Hemingway with a story about the third wife, Martha Gellhorn, who's a fascinating woman who was a war correspondent, who did things like hide in a hospital ship in order to, she locked herself in the bathroom in order to cover the Normandy battle. And the book is about their sort of competition, and they were competitors and lovers. And at the end of the book, she needs to sort of decide whether or not she should go pursue her career as a writer or, you know, focus on her marriage. And the author, Paula McLean, is a beautiful writer. So she not only is able to tell the story in a very lyrical, interesting way, but it also features famous writers that he mentioned. And if you don't know anything about Martha Gellhorn, she's a fascinating woman who covered, you know, tons of wars, and I think is a model to many war correspondents today.
Strong characters, beautiful writing. Hope that helps, Jeff. Love and Ruin by Paula McLean. We're talking to Elizabeth Curry Chandler, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Goodreads, talking about some great books to read this summer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you go to get book recommendations? Online, a trusted friend, the library? How do you choose one book to read when there are just so many to choose from? Call in at 800-642-1234, and you can share a book recommendation while you're at it. 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We continue our conversation all about what books to read this summer. Elizabeth Curry Chandler is co-founder and editor-in-chief of Goodreads. She's sharing some recommendations, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What books are you looking forward to reading this summer? What books are you recommending, old or new? And how do you pick a book? Where do you get recommendations yourself? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Karen is with us in Cumberland. Karen, hi.
Hi there. It's a really interesting topic. I love books, and I was fortunate enough to hear Louise Erdős, who wrote The Roundhouse and many other Native American books at LCO at the Big Read. And she was at the community college there and, you know, gave a presentation on the book that she had written. And her book is it's tragic, and it's funny, and it's a spectacular read.
Louise Erdős, that's a pretty big name, Elizabeth.
Yes, absolutely. She's very popular on the site. I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, journeys of various people, we could also talk about the book The Map of Salt and Stars by debut author Jennifer Zainab Dukadar. That's a heartfelt fictional look at the Syrian refugee crisis. It's about a 12-year-old girl who grows up in New York City, and then when her father dies, her mother takes her and her sisters back to Syria. It's a reverse immigration story, and violence erupts, and they become refugees. And it's really interesting because while her story, her current-day story, is being told, the author weaves in a parallel storyline about a 12th-century map maker and his apprentice, a North African girl named Sutra. And that's a fable her father used to tell her. And the two stories, the current day story and this fable, follow the same geographical path as they flee Syria. And we also talked to this author on Goodreads, and she told us that she wrote this book partly because she wanted to explore the stories we tell ourselves when we are in pain and see if our stories can help us heal. A really special book.
Thanks a lot for that call. I think we have time for one more. Maggie with us in Prairie Farm. Maggie, hi.
Hi. I was hoping to hear a recommendation for something sci-fi or fantasy written by a woman or a person of color.
All right, I got this one. N.K. Jemisin, The 100,000 Kingdoms. Anne Leckie, her series, I can't think of the name of it now, but L-E-C-K-I-E, both by women, both epic, I would say. Elizabeth, anything leap to mind for you?
Well, I was thinking of a fantasy book by a woman of color that I think is so important that she should know about it. It's a YA fantasy book that the author calls Black Panther with Magic. And it's by a Nigerian-American writer based in San Diego named Tomi Adeyemi. And it is about a girl, Zeli, who grows up in this fantasy land where they're cracking down on magic. And she has the chance to bring it back with the help of a rogue princess. And she has to outwit and outrun a crown prince who wants to get rid of magic for good. And it's really about a young hero rebelling against a regime. It's getting huge traction on Goodreads. And it really fits into this pattern we're seeing on the site of more diverse voices in YA, both books by diverse authors and filled with diverse voices.
Thank you for that call, Maggie. And Elizabeth, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for sharing these recommendations with us. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Elizabeth Curry Chandler, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Goodreads. She was with us to share some great books for summer reading. You can keep the recommendations coming, by the way, over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.